Welcome to Pyramid Podcast, where three lads discuss all things the English football pyramid. We're back for our second season. We're starting off with some predictions ahead of the new Premier League campaign. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Gallagher and Tom Lawrence. Boys, great to be back. Our last episode was actually a preview of the Euro 2024 final. Don't think we could bring ourselves to do a review after losing to Spain, but here we are, fresh season, fresh start, and a chance to lay down some more incorrect predictions. I'm going to start at the top. I want to start with the winners. I know last year, Laurie, you selected Arsenal to win the league, who ran Man City all the way, but just narrowly missed out. Are you backing them again for this year?
Yes, definitely. It all came down to one loss for Arsenal against Aston Villa on the run-in, I think, that cost them the title last season. Their trajectory is on a massively steep upward curve, and I think they're going to win it by quite a long way this season. I think the question is not who's going to win the league, but what is the order going to be behind them? Because I don't think City are even a shoo-in for second, which we might come to later. But yeah, I think Arsenal have got all the tools in the box to make sure that they can push on again, improve a little bit more, and literally all they need to do in layman's terms is win one more game. And I think with the experience they've picked up, with their gelling as a squad, with the improvement of some of their players, for instance, Havertz last season, the sort of evolvement of Rice in midfield, how solid the back line was again. I can't see past Arsenal winning the league this season, and it's not just doubling down on something I said last year. I felt really quite unlucky, actually, to be wrong last year. I thought Arsenal did enough, but such is life. Man City were very good and did what they do once more time, but I don't think it will happen again. And yeah, I think Arsenal will win the league at a canter this season.
Tomo, it was quite an ongoing theme last year of you saying City, Laurie saying Arsenal, and went down to the wire. City have made a couple of signings. Haaland obviously had spell on the sidelines last year where he was out. KDB the same, but they both look to be fit and firing. So I'm assuming you're sticking with City to win it again.
No. I think this will be the year where Loro has proven right. I think City will fall off. I think there's a lot of things going on at City in the background. Obviously, the 115 charges, that looks like that's going to get settled at some point at the early stages of 2025, pending appeals, etc. Pep Guardiola, his future looks uncertain. He'll be going into his last season. I know they've kept Edison and Kevin De Bruyne, but it feels like this will be their last season as well. You've got Kyle Walker getting on a bit. They've only signed Savinho. Not that they needed to freshen up the squad a lot, but like Julian Alvarez is gone. And I know he wasn't sort of a starter towards the end of the season, but he played the fourth most minutes out of the whole of the squad last year. And he's a very good player, which isn't unbelievable, insightful analysis of him. But he just pops up with important goals, and he's very versatile in that front line. So if Haaland's injured, which he was a bit last season, he can play up front. If De Bruyne is injured, Alvarez can play in that position as well. So yeah, there's a number of factors why I think City will drop off a bit. But the main reason really is because Arsenal were just trending. And I know that's a sort of a fancy word to use, like trending, but they've improved year on year points-wise, I think, for the last four seasons. They've added that Calafiori into their back line. He's a massive, like 6'2", 6'3", left-sided, either a left-back or a centre-back. And quite often last season, the left-back position was a bit of a weak spot for Arsenal. So that seems to have been covered. Mikel Arteta, although he's got that kind of Pep Guardiola school of coaching where he likes to keep the ball and it's quite nice on the eye, actually, he's also copied Pep in the sense of now they're going to be playing four centre-backs at the back four. Well, you've got Ben White, the two centre-halves who were the best last season, and Gabriel Saliba. And now you've got Calafiori. They're all 6'3". They're all massive. They were the best defence in the Premier League last season. They've only improved it. I think they might. The only sort of worry I do have for Arsenal is, can they get in another striker towards the end of the window, and I'm looking at the likes of Ivan Toney potentially. I think he'd be perfect for them just to... I know maybe Ivan Toney won't want to hear this, me say this, but he'd be a perfect player to have for the last 30 minutes of every game, last 20 minutes of every game. And obviously, if he goes on a run, he could definitely start ahead of the likes of Havertz or Gabriel Jesus. Although, I know I'm banging on it a bit, but I know Mikel Arteta did say that Gabriel Jesus has come back to pre-season a different animal this year. So he'll be in my fantasy team. I don't know whether he's just fluffing him up a little bit just to get his confidence going because he knows that maybe they're not going to make that big sign in the striker department. So he needs Gabriel Jesus to be at his best. But yeah, I've just got a good feeling about Arsenal. They're a really good run club. Mikel Arteta's, he's quite a funny little manager. I don't know if you boys heard that or read that Athletic article about Mikel Arteta hiring pickpockets in the pre-season on the dinner table, and pickpockets basically like snuck around and nicked a couple of the lads' watches, wallets and phones, etc. And then at the end of the dinner, Mikel Arteta said, right, check your pockets. And everyone realised that everything had been stolen. And he said, that's a lesson. He said, that's a lesson in concentration and being aware at all times. And I know that's a bit David Brent sort of style of management, but you can't deny that it's worked more often than not for Arsenal. And if you look at a couple of things they've done with the dog at the training ground, I know he's done some funky little things in a dressing room after watching that Arsenal documentary on Amazon. So yeah, look, I know I've bloody banged on a lot there, but yeah, it's Arsenal for me, and I think City will come second. I think they'll have a massive drop-off, but I think they'll come second.
It feels to me that Arteta's just, like, completely overthinks it, like Pep's completely got in his head beyond belief. You said about the pickpocketing, the dog. I think there was something where he was playing, like, You'll Never Walk Alone through speakers on the Arsenal dressing room to show the Liverpool atmosphere. I mean, you can't knock the guy's passion and his desire, but it just feels like Pep just seems to have the answer for everything that's ever thrown at him in the league. And yeah, it feels to me like Arteta's just scrambling. But one thing I will add as well is I think you said about the defence and the four centre-backs, that Jurrien Timber they signed as well from Ajax. He started and looked bright, didn't he? Then got a really bad injury early on. He can come into it. Obviously, Declan Rice is only going to be another year settled into life at Arsenal. So defensively, they're going to be rock solid. They've tied Raya down now permanently as well. So he's going to be number one. I just always think it comes down to with Arsenal, have they got the 25-goal-a-season man? It seems like every year someone says Jesus has come back a different beast. And by the third game week, he'll be out playing off the left. He just doesn't seem to be the out-and-out striker there. So do they need the striker to score the 25 goals that gets them over the line? Or do we think between Saka, Trossard, Martinelli, Jesus, Havertz, Odegaard popping up, that they'll have the goals that they need there to win the league? So, Laurie, you said there about Man City's drop-off and not sure if they'll finish second. I am actually backing them to win the league. I don't think there needs to be too much coverage as to why. It's hardly the kind of outside punt. But just talk a little bit more from your point of view about their drop-off and how you see they might not finish inside that top two.
I don't know. I just think they've just been right at the top for so long now, and they've got all these charges hanging over their head. I think they're like seventh favourites to get relegated because they'll be put in the Championship if they're found on the wrong side of some of the more serious cases, I think. And I just think when there's a little bit of a dark cloud in the background there, I think Kevin De Bruyne is a little bit edging towards his way over the hill now. And he's been so instrumental for them for so long. And I really don't like their attacking options at the moment other than Haaland. I mean, they're for a long time, they counted on the likes of Mahrez and Sterling and players like that. I just don't think Doku and Grealish are going to give them enough to continually win leagues. And Foden can't do what he did last year every year. Foden was the difference last year with them winning the league or not. He just turned up probably from October, November onwards and turned into the world beater that we've been expecting him to be for a while. So I don't necessarily think someone's going to beat them into second because Liverpool are going to be amazing or Newcastle are going to be fantastic or West Ham are going to come out of the pack and finish second. I just think there might be such a big drop-off with Man City whereby a few results don't go their way. All of a sudden, by November, December, the title's out of the question, and maybe they just sort of flounder, and the season peters out for them. I mean, some of this is hope, maybe more than realistic predictions. But there's a part of me that just thinks they're due a season that just goes by the wayside, and that would be good for Arsenal and maybe one or two other teams as well. But I'm still thinking they'll probably get in the Champions League.
They had their sort of random tweet came out, didn't there, that spoke about them potentially agreeing a fee for Luis Diaz, which I know was shut down fairly quickly. But they're obviously going to have some Julian Alvarez money for them to be able to spend. I think with Doku and Grealish, he's not particularly thrilled with them there. Oscar Bob, who's been getting some minutes, I think's broke a bone in his leg and is going to be out for quite a large part of the season. I wonder if City might sign someone in the last few weeks for that left wing side slot. I could see maybe like Jack Grealish going out on loan or with a view to for a permanent somewhere. Genuinely, I do. I think he might go on loan somewhere.
I was just going to say, I thought Diaz would have been a brilliant signing. I think he would have fitted in with
that train of thought without just calling it out. But first of all, I think there is a train of thought that Man City have only signed Savinho, who, by the way, has come from Troyes, or however you pronounce it, basically their sister club. So they basically move in assets from club to club. And the school of thought is that they're only signing him because they feel like something big's coming down the pipeline. And if they get relegated, there's no point in spending 80 million on a player who's going to want to leave as soon as they get relegated. Do you know what I mean? And they can't assure these big name signings that nothing massive is going to happen. If I was, Luis Diaz, for instance, the first thing I'd want my agent to find out is where do they think these charges are going? So there is a school of thought that will happen. Jack Grealish is going nowhere, Murph. He's on 350 grand a week. He's got 2 or 3 years left on his contract. His stock has fallen. He's injured again. There's no one who's going to come in for him on those wages, and no one's going to pay the price. I think he's, 29 now? 28, 29? So just stop that train of thought right there.
Laurie?
Just forget the possible sanctions that City are going to be under. I thought Luis Diaz would have been a brilliant signing. When I saw that, I thought, oh yeah, that resonates with me as a Pep signing that will probably give them another option wide, but also maybe fill a bit of a void that Alvarez leaves. And I actually think Alvarez is a really good sale. I think when they got offered 70, 80 million, whatever it was, when they bought him for 12 a couple of years ago, I reckon they would have seen that fax come through in the office and gone, well, we weren't going to sell you, Julian, but for this amount of money, we're going to have to. And let's have it right. Doku has got the worst end product in the Premier League, so he's not going to win you a league. And Jack Grealish, ever since he's been at City, although he had one really good season in the treble season contributing, not really with goals and assists. So they need a wide forward at the very least to help them. And I think Luis Diaz would have been good. But as with the sanctions, I've got absolutely no idea where they're going to go, way above my head.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely stunned if he's not thinking about bringing someone in, Pep, with Alvarez and the money they've got for him. And I know Oscar Bob wasn't a core starter last year, but he definitely, I think, was going to play some extra minutes. I'll be stunned if they don't do something late in the window, City. So, boys, moving on to the top four battle then. Let's say that we say the top two spots are occupied by Man City and Arsenal, or certainly City will finish in the top four. who do we think are likely to fill those remaining slots? So your main contenders are obviously Liverpool, who have got a new manager with Klopp leaving, in transition, struggling to get transfers over the line. You've got the new look Man United with the new ownership, but they have stuck with Erik ten Hag after a long sort of process of trying to identify who the manager should be. And then looking further down, you've got the likes of Villa and Newcastle. Villa obviously got their debut season in the Champions League. Newcastle looking to get back in amongst it. And then you've got Big Ange's Spurs, Chelsea, and maybe a little outside one in West Ham, who've recruited well. So, Tomo, who were you expecting to see in that those top four spaces?
Yeah, I think this sort of like third to ninth now, if you include West Ham in the mix, because they've made some good signings, it's like the trickiest positions to predict, because I can see Man United coming third and ninth. Do you know what I mean? I can see Chelsea coming third and ninth. Or I can see Chelsea coming 12th. Do you know what I mean? Like Tottenham, for instance, I can see coming third and ninth. It's like there's not even Liverpool with Arne Slot, who they've had in a pretty impressive pre-season, but the alarm bells are already sounding amongst their fan base on Twitter because they haven't made a signing. So it's tricky, but for me, just because I guess because of my Man United bias a little bit, and because I just think the structure of the club has definitely improved. I'm not as enamoured about the signings of De Ligt and Mazwari, to be honest, as others have suggested, because essentially they were like Mazwari is a Bayern squad player. But I know kind of the reasons behind getting him and bringing and selling Wan-Bissaka. He's more of a Ten Hag player, but De Ligt, there's something about De Ligt basically going from Juventus to Bayern Munich to Man United so early on in his career makes me think that there's something wrong with him. I don't know what it is. Like he's signed for big money for Juventus, done really well, then lost his place, then left to go to Bayern. And then last season, in and out of the team, I think towards the end of the season, he was playing centre-back with Dia. I've noticed that their fans are pretty unhappy that he's being sold for that much money. And I don't know whether it's because he's got an agent who just wants him to move on all along. But yeah, so I'm not too enamoured about those signings. But I do think that we've got a better team than last season. And with the likes of Garnacho and Mainoo and Hoyland, sort of last year was their breakthrough season. This year, hopefully get an extra 5-10% out of those. Hopefully, fingers crossed, Rashford has a little bit more of the 2022-23 form as opposed to 23-24. And then Casemiro as well. I watched the Community Shield the other day and Casemiro looks like he's lost 5 kilos. So that's a good sign because he looked really overweight and sluggish last year. So hopefully he can have another good year. So yeah, Man United third. And in fourth, I think it will be Liverpool. Just think Arne Slot's a good manager. And they weren't that bad. Like they've got a good squad. They've got a good nucleus of a squad.
I think some of these players, like Casemiro, didn't go to the Copa America, and that was great for him, probably after playing summer tournament after summer tournament and, you know, first year in a new country, all that sort of thing. Great for him. And you spoke about Liverpool there. Mo Salah, you know, had an AFCON previously, hasn't this year. I think he's going to be fresh. So I think some of these players are going to really benefit from actually having a bit of a summer break and going into it. So, Laura, Tomo's gone for United and Liverpool. Obviously, as I say, you've got the likes of Spurs, Chelsea, Villa as well, all vying for it. Where would you put your top four predictions alongside Arsenal and City?
As it stands, I think Liverpool have got enough left, even if it's a bit of a crap season for them, to finish in the top four. So I think they'll be there or thereabouts, somewhere between second and fourth. And then I think it will be between Newcastle, Tottenham and Man United for fourth. I'm reluctant to give too much push behind Manchester United just because they've let us down so many times in the past, but I like the freshness of how it feels there at the moment. I think a few of the signings, I mean, like you talk about De Ligt, for instance, he lost his place at Juve and then he was a Bayern squad player. But Man United aren't going to win the league this season. So as long as expectations are adjusted to fit that finishing in the Champions League spot will be a good season for Man United, De Ligt will be a good player. And if every time they lose, people think, oh, that's it, we're not going to win the league, and then they go on a bad run again, happens, then it'll just be same old. But I think if Man United think, right, we need to get in the Champions League this season, we've got a freshness about the approach on and off the pitch, there's some decent signings, not world beaters, but decent signings that we can build on in the future, I think they could be there or thereabouts. But I'm reluctant to put them in. I love Tottenham's addition of Dominic Solanke. I think he replaces, not Harry Kane like for like, obviously, but he gives them a proper focal point in attack. They've got lots of good wide players. They've got creative players. But I think Richarlison, for instance, isn't an out-and-out centre-forward, and they probably missed that last season. And then I think Newcastle have got a really good chance of doing well again like they did the season before last, because I don't think they'll be as unlucky with injuries. They've got the likes of Tonali coming back. Isaac looks like an absolute world beater now. So all about momentum for them. They can get off to a good start, which I think most people are predicting them to against Southampton. They've got a really, really good shout of being in the top four as well. So I'm going to go Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, Tottenham just from Newcastle. What I will say is Chelsea have got absolutely no chance. They're in the worse boat than they were this time last year, in my opinion. They've got a completely unproven manager who almost bottled a one-horse race in the Championship last year in Enzo Maresca, and they've got everything to do to, I think, get in the top eight. So Spurs, Man United and Newcastle, I'm just going to go Spurs for fourth.
So, interestingly there, Newcastle, you said about having a better season. And I think last year they were actually hampered. The fans won't say it, but hampered by suddenly having Champions League football to contend with as well. I think it's a really interesting point that they won't have that European football next year, I don't think. I think Man United wouldn't be FA Cup, meant they don't go into the Conference League. And Chelsea will be in that instead. But one team, Tomo, that will now be in the Champs League is Aston Villa. And I think they're going to have a very similar campaign to Newcastle, where they're suddenly going to have to deal with that. I know they've had European football previously on Thursday night, so Unai Emery's used to balancing the squad and things like that. But I just think Champs League is a slightly different beast, and the players are going to be so up for wanting to be in Champions League squads and games that it might impact their league form. So I've actually got them down to underachieve this season. They've lost Dougie Louise as well, because they've had to sell some players. I know they've brought reinforcements in Onana and Ross Barkley and the like, but just be interesting to hear how you think Villa are going to do.
Yeah, interesting to hear you say you think they're going to underachieve, but where have you got them in your prediction, your table?
Yeah, it's a good point. I'd probably have them come in sort of sixth or seventh, which actually as a Villa fan, you might say is not an underachievement. But once you've finished in the top four, does that then year on year become your aim? If they finish outside of the Champs League, have they underachieved? That's another question that you could maybe delve into.
Yeah, well, that's basically it. Like when these clubs sort of dip in and out of the Champions League, like Newcastle have, Villa will do this year, it completely changes the expectations of the club, the fans, the players. And I think that kind of hindered Newcastle a little bit last year, because we're all sat there. I think, where did they come in the end? Sixth. But that's quite a good season for Newcastle. 2 years after getting taken over, not being able to spend as much money as they want because of FFP. But quite often last season, it felt like, oh, Eddie Howe, they're on the precipice, like they're struggling. And obviously, because they got knocked out of the Champions League group state in the group stages as well, it felt a little bit like doom and gloom. Whereas, but yeah, the challenge of the Champions League compared to the Europa League, it's a massive difference, really, because basically they're going to play their starting 11 in the Champions League. Do you know what I mean? And for the first couple of games in the Europa League, especially, you can imagine they play basically half their first team. They play a couple of the squad players. They utilise more of their squad. Whereas the Champions League, and let's not forget, in this new format, it's two extra games.
Yeah.
So they'll be playing eight games in the league, I believe, instead of six. and that the financial rewards, the everything that goes with that, and sort of the brand recognition of being a Champions League club will mean that, and Unai Emery, we all know he's a European sort of specialist when it comes to European football. They'll put quite a lot of their importance and their focus onto that competition. So I agree with you. I think they'll have a little bit of a drop off, but I've got them at sixth. So I still think that's a good season. Sixth, I think, qualifies you for the Europa League, depending on the coefficients, depending on who wins the FA Cup, etc. I just think one thing I will say, I know Moussa Diaby didn't play that much towards the end of last season, but I thought he was electric at the start of the season last year. And then Douglas Luiz, basically their best centre mid. So I know they've replaced those two. Onana's come in. Mattson's come in as well, I think will be a good sign-in. They made quite a few sign-ins, but they hit such heavy heights, such high heights last season. I don't think they'll get quite there, but I still think they'll have a good season, and I've got them down a sixth.
I think Villa will do really well in the Champions League, and if I was a Villa fan, I wouldn't mind that. There is no point qualifying for the Champions League every year, getting knocked out in the group stages, and then just having it hamper your Premier League form. If I was Aston Villa, I wouldn't care. If they could get to like quarters, semi-final of the Champions League, I wouldn't care if they were in anywhere in the top 10 if I was a Villa fan. And I think they've got a lot of big, strong kind of international players that have been under or been involved in big games. You've got Martinez in goal. Watkins had some good experience in the Euros. They've got some really experienced midfielders in Tielemans and Kamara and McGinn. And I think Onana is a really good replacement for Dougie Luiz. I think he's got it in him to go onto the next level. And Belgium normally trust him as well. So I think at defence, they've got loads of good options as well. Big, strong players that I think will be able to handle that kind of competition football physically and mentally. And if I'm an Aston Villa fan, I'm thinking, let's go all out of the Champions League then. If it's going to hamper our league form, fine. We're not getting relegated. We're probably not going to be in the bottom half. We've got far too much quality for that. But let's go and have an absolute charge. And in the early 2000s, Leeds did it. And they got to the semi-final. League form suffered. And yes, okay, it didn't work out too well for Leeds after that. But boy, oh boy. Was that quarterfinal against Deportivo La Coruña unbelievable, and the semi-final against Valencia? And that's the whole point of getting to the Champions League. You want the big games. You don't want to just go there, fizzle out in the group stages and be on a downer. So let's get behind Aston Villa in the Champions League this season, and I don't give a crap where they finish in the Premier League.
Yeah. A really good example of that would be West Ham in the Conference League. That year, right? Does anyone remember their Premier League form? No. I think they were like 15th, 14th. If you ask West Ham fans now, do they give a flying fuck about that season other than winning a European trophy? No. And it was those nights that they'll remember for like 20, 30 years with their sons who went to the game, with their dads who went to the game, uncles, their mates. So, yeah. Loro, spot on.
Nice segue as well. West Ham, a team that I've put to overachieve, Loro, and we obviously have been chatting off air about some of our predictions and what that means. But you made a very interesting point that is, what does overachieving look like for West Ham given their signings? They've obviously signed Somerville from Leeds. They've signed Fulkrug from Dortmund. They've added Max Kilman. They've signed Tadebo, who was linked with Man United. They've made some real smart acquisitions. So A, do you fancy them to do well this year under Lopetegui? And B, what do you think overachieving would be for West Ham?
Overachieving for West Ham would be top four. I think with the amount of money and the size of the club, or the size that the people within the club think they are now, they should be top six. With the not just the signings they've made, but the amount of money they've spent. Like, we're talking about Max Kilman from Wolves. We spent 50 million on him. Somerville from the Championship, 25 million. Fulkrug, that I think that's a really good signing. But again, 27 million euros. Wan-Bissaka, who again, on paper, should be a good signing. I'm very worried about West Ham that they've spent an awful lot of money. They've risen their expectations. not just of how well they're going to do, but how they're going to do it. Because remember, David Moyes got them into Europe and into some top seven or eight positions, and that wasn't good enough because they weren't playing free-flowing West Ham way football, whatever that means. So I think there's a lot of pressure on the new manager there to come in and A, integrate these signings into the squad, into the Premier League very quickly and turn it into results, and B, doing it in a way that appeases everyone. So I'm probably the reverse of what you're thinking there. I don't know what you think overachieving is for West Ham, but I would say if you're spending all that money on a club that's got a huge stadium and already quite an expensively assembled group of players, they need to be looking at the top six. They've already done seventh. I think they finished seventh under Moyes and got into Europe a couple of times. They've won a cup. So progression is needed. Has to be top six, and overachieving would be top four. And if they do that, hats off, fair play to them.
Yeah, in my mind, I had them finishing in those European places. They finished ninth last year, 8 points behind Newcastle and United. But you are right in regards to the amount of money that they've spent and the squad they've assembled. If they were to finish sixth, is that a massive overachievement? I think the only thing, counter-argument, I would say that to now, is with City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Villa, Tottenham, Chelsea, Newcastle, Man United, all in that hunt regardless. Regardless of that money that West Ham have spent, which of those teams are they definitely going to finish above? You know, if they've got that squad of players assembled, is their starting 11 better than any of those teams that we've listed there? Look, you can probably make a case for one or two, but Chelsea finished sixth. That's a club who've got Enzo Fernandez at 120 million, Saicedo at 100 million, Lavia, and that's just three centre mids that they've signed. You've got United who are spending 60, 70, 80 millions at will. Newcastle signing a striker for 60 mil in Isaac, signing Anthony Gordon. Spurs signing a striker for 60 mil in Solanke. They're the teams that haven't finished in the top four. So West Ham have spent that money just to compete with that. So for a new manager to come in, breed that team, get them gelled, and to finish sixth, I think would be a big step in the right direction for them. Could you say that they've just achieved rather than overachieved? Yeah, you could probably make a case for that. But I think it's so hard now to get into the top eight of the Prem that they'd still have had a great season if they did finish there.
Yeah, but in just, the context of West Ham, remember, it wasn't good. I'm sure they finished seventh or eighth under Moyes at some point, and that wasn't good enough. And they've spent all of this money. I'm not. If they get in the top six, fair play. But that isn't an overachievement. You need to be doing that now, I think. That's progression. That's the whole point of what you wanted. Otherwise, there's no way that there should have been so much pressure for Moyes to go. I'm looking at West Ham signing these players and with what they've already got, pushing into the top six. Yes, it's difficult. Of course it is. There's lots of teams there that have spent big money as well. But this is the Premier League. And that's why it was so impressive that they got into European football in the first place. But it wasn't really recognised, was it? And it was, we're not playing the right way. And, you know, the size of the club and the size of the ground, where you spent a load of money now. So let's see. Top six, I'm expecting.
Just a bit of context as well on that is, I think even though they've signed all these players and it looks like positive signings as well, the overhanging betting allegation and charge of Lucas Paqueta, who I think is their best player, is quite important. And if it turns out that he was guilty of what he did, and if you read some of the reports, they're basically calling for a life ban. So it sounds like a very serious offence. If he's found guilty of that, then he'll be a massive blow to them. He'll be a massive blow to anyone because he'll be definitely West Ham's best player. I think personally, success for West Ham will be eighth, ninth, playing progressive, positive football, and then getting into a cup final. So League Cup, FA Cup final. And I think the fans will probably be happy with that if the results are pretty similar to David Moyes, but the style of football is more exciting, like the players excite them more. I just think the Moyes thing, even though I do feel sorry for what happened to him, it did feel like it was the right time for all parties to go their separate ways.
If they finish eighth or ninth, though, that's no Europe. And we've just spoke about the Aston Villa, you know, the going deep in the Champions League. And you spoke about West Ham and what that meant to them, having those nights and things like that. I don't think West Ham fans would take ninth now and say, but we've played decent football in the Premier League. They'll want European football next year with the squad they've assembled. And they'll want those nights back. That was in the Conference League. That then meant they were in the Europa League last year, if I've got my dates right, if not the year before. They've not got Europe this year. I don't think West Ham fans, with the squad they've assembled, will have much appetite for that to go on beyond this year.
I think you'd get your head kicked in if you told a West Ham fan that finishing ninth and, oh, you get to play in a cup final. Honestly, I've seen Watford and Stoke get to the FA Cup final in recent years. I honestly think you'd get a paste in if you said that to a West Ham fan. Ninth. What's the point? Like, I don't necessarily disagree that it's a natural end for David Moyes, but it's not that it was a natural end. It was that he was put under quite a lot of pressure and kind of disdain towards the end over his way of playing, which may have been boring, but it was actually quite efficient. And he did a really good job there, better than any West Ham manager I can remember. So they've already got good players. Yeah, even if Paqueta goes, they've got Somerville, they've got Kudus, they've got Jared Bowen, who I think has been made captain. I think the centre forward from Germany is really going to suit the Premier League. They've been crying out for a striker for a long, long time. I mean, up until last year, they've still got the former Nottingham Forest right back playing up there in Mikel Antonio. I think that Falkirk's got all the ingredients to be a top, top Premier League striker that can give defences hell. And it's on them now to kick on. So no, not ninth in a cup final. Progression in terms of league position. And that needs to be sixth plus. Not easy, but that's what it needs to be.
You can just already see on Match of the Day, Ward-Prowse whipping balls in for that Falkirk, can't you, from free kicks and corners and things like that. And him just getting his big German Swede on it and firing home, to the point where I'm now thinking about going onto my FPL and putting all eggs in Falkirk's basket.
I thought it's 7 million. Tasty.
How much, Laurie?
7 million.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I fancy him to do that. We like a centre forward in the Prem, don't we? The likes of like your Cavani's and people like that who come in. Some players just suit the Prem and he feels like he's going to. And with people like Bowen, Kudus, Somerville behind him, Ward-Prowse putting balls into the box, they're going to have a rock solid defence, I think, with Wan-Bissaka, Tadebo, Max Kilman. I know Kurt Zouma's linked with a move away, so not sure what's happening with him. But, you know, you've got Suchek, Kufau, players like that. I think they're going to have a good season, West Ham, which I've got them as overachievers. But yeah, up for debate what good looks like.
Who's the lad that sits in midfield for West Ham? Always forget his name. Next to
Edson Alvarez.
Yeah, he's a hell of an underrated player. He's the sort of player that you could see like at the end of next year signing for Man City or someone like that. So again, like you just said, rock solid defence. They've got a really good base in midfield. You're right. Whether they like to think it or not, they've got really good options from set pieces with Ward-Prowse and now with that number nine coming in. So again, all these things make up to certainly a position expectation above ninth, in my opinion.
Right, boys, let's look at the other end of the table then. And obviously last year we had Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United all depart the Prem fairly swiftly. We've got three promoted sides in Leicester, Ipswich and Southampton have come up, and looking at the teams that struggled towards the bottom of the Prem but stayed up last year, your Everton's, your Forests. Do you think it's going to be a case, Laura, of all three teams from the Championship going straight back down? Obviously, you had first-hand experience of playing against them with Leeds last year.
Maybe. I think Ipswich have got one of the worst squads on paper in terms of Premier League quality that we've ever seen. And that is no disrespect to them. But they were basically a League One side getting promoted from the Championship. And they haven't brought an awful lot in to suggest Premier League quality. Although I think they're close to getting Calvin Phillips over the line. But the jury's probably out on him and his ability to influence a team in the Premier League at the moment. Leicester. I'm not sure what the situation is with the points deduction that apparently is hanging over their head, but I've put them as overachievers because I think they've got a couple of players in there, particularly their wide men in Mavididi, and forgive me if this is wrong, but Fatawu, who I think will really suit the Premier League and cause defence problems. And if they do get a points deduction, I think they've probably got the biggest sniff of getting out of trouble. And Southampton, although we love Russell Martin and they play really good football, I'm not convinced their squad is strong enough. I think there's a big gulf between what they've got and a lot of the other sides. And I think it might have been a year too soon for them. I don't think they should have got promoted last year. I think Leeds should have. but they have. They found themselves in the Premier League, and I'm not sure they're going to be overly prepared for what's to come. So I think Ipswich and Southampton are going to be the bottom two. And if Leicester do survive, my tip for relegation this season is flirting with death, Nottingham Forest, who just remind me of what Leeds were doing for a couple of years there, just kind of meandering down at the bottom, nicking a result here and there to stay up. But I think they've got a real lack of quality in there as well. So I'm going to go Ipswich, Southampton and Nottingham Forest and hope that Leicester make a great escape.
Tomo, again, we've obviously spoken about predictions off air, and you fancy Ipswich to have a slightly better season than that.
Yeah, I think Ipswich are my favourites to stay up amongst the three that that came up. I think Kieran McKenna, they've just got a special manager. I think they've made some quite astute and clever signings because they basically bought a couple of players, or three or four very good players from the Championship who could potentially make the step up. But if they don't and they get relegated, then they're very good in a very good place next season to then make a promotion charge again. And I just Kieran McKenna's the one for me. I think Leicester, the overriding thing for me is the points deduction. Apparently it's going to be six, which is a hell of a lot when you consider they've just come up. And then Southampton, I think, I agree with Lauro, I think they're going to be this season's Burnley, where Russell Martin, albeit a very good manager, but quite stubborn in his ways, wants to play really good football, but just won't have the players to be able to execute his style of play as well as he wants in the Premier League. And I think they'll come unstuck. Completely agree with Lauro about Nottingham Forest. I think they're done. I think this is the season they're done. Last season, they were the most chaotic club, coming out with statements about the PGMOL, about VAR. The owner's obviously quite... He's a bit nuts, isn't he, to be fair, giving him... I'm sure he'll... I think there was one time at last season, he stormed onto the pitch, didn't he, to have a go at the ref. And then he hired Mark Clattenburg as referee and analyst. Like, he's just a weird owner. Nottingham Forest seem to be always in a state of like chaos, and I think this will be the year they go down.
Can I pick you up on something, Tegal?
Go on.
Which signings, incomings that Ipswich have made, do you feel are astute and clever?
Jacob Greaves and Liam Delap and Amari Hutchinson.
Okay. And so Amari Hutchinson.
I think Ben Johnson, free transfer from West Ham, is a good signing as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good signing. Amari Hutchinson obviously did well for them last year. What was it about Liam Delap's 8 in 32 at Stoke that you think is going to set the Premier League on fire? We have to speak about Ipswich in the context of the Premier League now. Like, in the Championship, these have been unbelievable signings, and they have got an amazing manager. If he keeps this squad up now, this Ipswich squad, that is one of the best jobs. He's already one of the best managers in probably recent history for what he's done. But that would be one of the very best jobs, because for me, he would effectively be keeping a League One team in the Premier League. And I'm not sure that Ben Johnson, Liam Delap and Jacob Greaves is going to send the fear of life into the likes of Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, etc. And they're going to have to play one of them every other week.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know you said there, look, you have to speak in the context of the Premier League. But what I said was, I think they're astute signings based on the fact that if they do get relegated, they're in a good position to come back up again.
Okay.
So
are they going to get relegated or not?
No, I think they'll stay up. I think they'll stay up. I think, yeah, but ooh. I just think that they are astute signings.
Okay. Where do the goals come from? Because we've said that basically Liam Delap's been bought in to send them back up, even though he only achieved 8 for Stoke last season. Who there now is going to score? Because you need to score goals to stay in the Premier League, don't you? You ain't going to win games otherwise. So where do the goals come from? That's what I'm worried about, Tigger.
Yeah, Yeah, well, that's always the way in the with promoted teams. It always feels like if you can get a goal scorer banging them in, then you have much more of a chance because you probably need to score two goals a game, don't you, at least.
22 years ago, Ipswich got promoted and Marcus Stewart outscored Thierry Henry and Van Nistelrooy to win the Golden Boot. They finished fifth. So if you can get the right striker, sky's the limit. They've got the right manager. I just don't think they've got the firepower. But I'd love to see it.
I had a really, really weird dream last night as well that ex-England starting midfielder and Man City midfielder Calvin Phillips signed for Ipswich, which would have been a really, really good bit of business for Ipswich, but obviously terrible for Calvin Phillips' career and is, of course, not going to happen. But you could maybe put him down as an astute signing if Ipswich managed to pull that off. So we have gone for then Leicester, Southampton to go down, and then we're wondering whether it's going to be between Ipswich and Forest for the final spot. I would add into the mix, I think Brentford will have a better year this year under Thomas Frank, but I'd add Everton into the mix as well. I know Sean Dyche got them playing a bit better last year and they had the points deduction, but they just always seem like a side who just aren't quite ready to just kick back on in the Premier League. So
just quickly,
you know, have them down there.
Just quickly, without the points deductions last year, Everton would have come 12th.
Yeah, I don't like their style of play at all. And have they strengthened this year, Tomo? To be honest, I've not even seen if they've done any business. Is there anyone coming at Everton who's going to help?
They've signed Jake O'Brien from Lyon, who I must confess, never even heard of. But he's basically come out and basically said, I love the way Sean Dyche has turned Jared Branthwaite into. So he basically wants to emulate that kind of glow up that Branthwaite's had. Like Laura says about Ipswich, the biggest challenge for Everton will be scoring goals.
They have signed Illiman and Dye, who's a good player. He was at Sheffield United the year before last in the Championship. And he was a real, real standout. I think he played against England for... Is he Senegalese, maybe? But he's had a year in France. And obviously, Sean Dyche just brought him in. And I think he's very likely to play in that kind of position in behind the striker, a little bit what they normally shoved Decore in. I think he fell off a cliff last season. But someone just to pick up extra goals to help the likes of, I don't know who's going to play up there, Morpé or Calvert-Lewin. But he should be a good signing. And I just think Dyche's kind of organisation, they've still got lots of sort of strong towering defenders in Tarkowski and Keane and Mikalenko. I think they'll probably have enough physically to get enough points probably at home to stave off the likes of your Forests and people like that.
They've got an Onana-sized hole in midfield, though, who is obviously an important player for them. I know Decore scored some important goals, but I know this happens with every football club because everyone does, but it all feels like their players are just that little bit older again, like Seamus Coleman, Tarkowski, Ashley Young, people like that. Calvert-Lewin seems to have completely dropped off. Beto didn't kick on from his worldy performance at the Keep Moat last year.
Beto.
You can imagine that someone might eventually come in for Branthwaite as well. It's probably not going to be this summer, but they're going to need to cash in on him at some stage. Mikalenko gets linked with a move away every so often as well. Good fullback. I don't know. I'm just going to throw it out there that I think they might be down there as well. I really do.
Just one point to add, actually, that none of us has mentioned is I think this year is the final year of Goodison Park. So not only will that mean we'll be bored to tears of all the emotional monologues that people will be talking about on Sky Sports and TNT about Goodison Park, but there'll be an even more emotional kind of wave flowing through Liverpool and Everton Football Club based on that. So I wonder if that factor will help them or hinder them.
I remember West Ham made Upton Park a cauldron when they were finishing up there. Obviously it was anyway, and it felt like the fans were always on top of you, but they like almost got their like fairy tale ending there, didn't they? So maybe you're right. Maybe that will be enough for Everton, but I'm not seeing enough there to get them anywhere up the table. And it's just then are one of those relegated sides or Forest good enough to finish above them. But I'm backing them to have a poor season, Everton. Boys, just want to look at some individual players as well before we wrap up. Top goal scorer, I think, is fairly across the board likely to be Erling Haaland. So rather than just name him for Golden Boot, I'd like to maybe look at some of the other players outside it as someone who can maybe tip to come in second place or get sort of 20 goals this season. And Laura, I'll start with you.
Palmer.
Fancy him again in...
Yeah, I do. I think he is going to be like the next Salah in terms of inevitability. He's so impressive. And I just think, obviously, watching England over the Euros as well, when a player plays for your team, you see a little bit more than when they're playing for like someone like for Chelsea last season, just watching Chelsea. But when they're playing for a side that you're interested in, I think you notice a little bit more. And his like temperament and head on his shoulders, he doesn't let anything faze him at all. It just seems like he's got no weight on his shoulders whatsoever. And I think he'll play every game for Chelsea, take every penalty kick. And he's got so much quality. He scored in the European Championship final. There's no signs with him for me that it's going to be a one-season wonder. I think he can do it again.
So maybe these nine-year contracts that Chelsea keep giving out are a stroke of genius, because you've got Cole Palmer running around the field, no care in the world because he knows he's got a nine-year contract in the bag.
I'm interested to see where he plays as well, because they've brought Pedro Neto in. Is he potentially going to step slightly more centrally, Palmer, and play in the 10 there? I know they got 43 players, but then if they do play him there in the 10, then that limits you to kind of two out and out centre mids. Is that going to be Saicedo and Enzo? Is Dewsbury Hall going to play? They got that Carney Chukwuemeka. They've got Lavia. They've got Leslie Ogocha as well? Like, they seem to just have all of these players. So I'll be intrigued to see where Palmer plays, or whether it's just like, you're probably the best player in the Prem in your position. You stay out on that right-hand side and cut in. So
just on Palmer as well, I'm really interested to see how he fits into Enzo Maresca's system, because Enzo Maresca seems to strike me as that type of coach who doesn't really give players loads of freedom. Like, he's a bit more like in the Pep Guardiola school, where it's like, the ball goes there, you stand there. The ball goes there, you stand there. We pass it in that direction, you go there. And Cole Palmer almost is like, he flies in the face of all that, and he just does his thing. And he sort of glides across the pitch and just like sees pictures that others don't. And just, I don't really think, but there's a potential sort of clash there. Or maybe just Cole Palmer's that good at football that he'll just be great again.
He won't be there at Christmas, the manager.
Yeah, I think he will probably have another great season. I was really surprised he signed that contract to Chelsea as well. It felt to me like he was someone who potentially would be in, like, if the madness continues there in a year's time, I want out of Chelsea. I want to go and like challenge for major titles and honours. So I was surprised to see that. It's not to say someone won't come in and pay the money for him and just pay a bit more. But yeah, I was surprised that he signed that new deal. Tomo, who are you fancying other than Haaland and Palmer?
Isak. I think if he stays fit, I think he'll actually challenge Haaland. But his fitness is questionable, and he's every 3 weeks he gets like a 1 week injury. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think if he stays fit all season, Newcastle will have a great season. But yeah, because I think when he was fit last year, they were brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, he's someone who they need to keep fit. The drop-off when he's not in it. I know Callum Wilson's been a able deputy, but he assists as well. Isak, he looks electric. He looks perfectly suited to the Prem.
He's more complete, isn't he, than Callum Wilson? Callum Wilson's an out-and-out finisher. He's a bit of a bully. Like, he goes one-on-one, like, he goes up against the defender a bit better. But Isak, you can imagine him in any club in the world and he would fit in perfectly. So, I actually think if he stays fit this season, he'll be right up there with Haaland. 28, 29 goals.
Yeah, this is not really a massive shout. It's up there with Spain underdogs for Euro 2024, if not even worse, to be honest. But I am going to go for Mo Salah. I know that he is inevitable and does it every year, but it's just like, the question was, who other than Haaland? It's almost like Salah has been that good for so many years that he almost is like underrated. It's like he just consistently does it, where it's like, oh, Mo Salah's not having a great season, but it's like you look and he's on 15 goals in the Prem and 25 in all comps. Yeah. And it's like, oh, Salah's dropped off. It's like Salah hasn't dropped off. He just consistently posts numbers.
Do you know who I blame for that? Do you know that mindset that you're talking about? I blame Messi and Ronaldo for that. Because Messi and Ronaldo scoring a goal a game for the last 10 seasons or the last 20 years, and they've completely warped everyone's minds. And so Salah, like you just said, he might drop off, but he'll score 25 overall. And it's like, well, has he had a bad season or not? But like, just because he's, I think in his first season, he scored one a game, didn't he? And it, but like, yeah, you're right. I did a little bit of reading on Liverpool's pre-season, and apparently he looks unbelievably sharp. And that goes into the thinking of players who haven't had a Euros or a Copa America in the summer. They're obviously had a longer pre-season. They're going to be fitter and sharper than everyone else. So, yeah. Mo Salah, obviously, it's not a big shout from you, but yeah, I agree.
He's had before as well, like the whole Saudi Arabia move over his head last year. Will he, won't he? It feels like now he's almost saying, like, I've got 1 year left on my deal. He might go at the end of it. It's almost like he's just playing without those sort of thoughts in his head as well from pre-season form, how he's looked. So, yeah, as I say, not the biggest shout in the world, but I am going to back him to be right up there with Haaland as well. So, yeah, Palmer, Salah and Isak tip to have good seasons, which is probably quite an obvious one. Just want to finish up, boys, with a player to watch out for as well. And Lauro, an ex-Leeds boy in your mind to do well.
Yeah, if he plays, I think Archie Gray, under a manager like Big Ange, will flourish. I think he's the sort of player that Tottenham fans will like. He's confident on the ball. He can play forward. He's versatile as well. He can play in a couple of different positions. I'm not sure whether it will be this season or not, but if he gets in that team, I think it'll be very hard to get him out because I think he'll impress and he'll be a fan's favourite. So young Archie Gray for me is going to be one to watch this season. I think he can. I think it's a good move for him. I think it suits him, the club, and being in that kind of lush amphitheatre that Tottenham play in now with the big LZ in charge. I think all of those factors together will mean that he'll do well there. And hopefully it's this season. And yeah, we'll see him become a fan's favourite at Tottenham.
And Tom, I know you're backing him as well. And maybe with the news that Basuma's been suspended by the club and Bentancur's sort of injury record that he has, there's probably going to be ample opportunities for Archie Gray early doors to impress.
Yeah, well, he's the thing is, right, he's played centre back in pre-season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like he's very, like last season he was right back for Leeds most of the season, wasn't it? Like he's so versatile and he's so good that he'll get a lot of minutes because he'll play right back, or he can probably play centre back sometimes. And well, he obviously can play centre mid because that's his position. But yeah, one because Lauro, I knew he was going to mention Archie Gray. I wanted to mention another Spurs youngster who I've seen a couple clips of in pre-season, and he was 16 at the time. He's just turned 17, but this Mickey Moore winger apparently is being spoken about as this like generational talent, who like once in a lifetime player. He's just turned 17. He's just signed a new contract. Saw a couple clips of him where he scored and got an assist in pre-season. He basically looks electric. And obviously, if you're 16 years old and you're making an effect in men's football, even if it is just pre-season, there is something special about you. And I remember when I watched Man City in pre-season, what, 5, 6, 7 years ago, whenever it was, and I've mentioned this a couple times, Lauro, so I know you're going to...
I've heard this one before.
Yeah, with a wry smile. But I remember watching Phil Foden when he was 16 absolutely dominate Paul Pogba, who was 24, 25 at the time. And I know that was pre-season, but yeah, so Mickey Moore, one to watch.
I'm going to throw a winger into the mix as well. At United, Amad Diallo. He finished the season strongly last year. He's had minutes in pre-season with players being away at international tournaments or injured. The right wing spot has been an issue at United for years and years and years now. We've signed Jadon Sancho to try and solve it, who decided he was a left winger. We signed Antony, who is the worst player to play in the Premier League in history. Mason Greenwood's obviously had his troubles as well and has left the club. I know Garnacho plays out there a bit when they're trying to get Rashford in the team as well. But I think with the amount of games, Europa League, Carling Cup, FA Cup and Premier League, I think he'll get plenty of opportunities there. And I think he's a great player. He looks electric. He looks like he can cut in onto his left foot at will. He did it at Sunderland, did okay at Rangers, but started to break into the United team last year. And I think he's going to have a big season. So backing him to do big things. And he's only 5 million on FPL if anyone's looking for a bargain. Which on that note, we'll finish up, guys, by saying that we have got an FPL league that we've started by Pyramid Podcast this year. We're going to do prizes for first, second and third place. And there'll also be the cup competition that you'll be automatically entered into, where there'll be a prize as well. The code for that is on our Twitter or X page, but we'll put another link out to directly join the league before the season gets underway tomorrow night at Old Trafford. Tomo?
And just before we go as well, can I just ask the listeners just to share all our content on Twitter, all our content on Instagram, give us 5-star reviews, because we really want this to grow and get bigger, and it doesn't cost you anything, just a few clicks, and hopefully give us a 5-star review.
Yeah, I mean, be honest on your review, but even if you think it's crap, give us 5, please. Boys, that's all we got time for. We'll be back next week. Obviously, the EFL is back underway. Yeovil have started in their new league in the National League. So we'll be looking forward to hear all about Laurie's travels across that. And obviously, we'll have the first week of the Prem out the way. But boys, pleasure as always. Have a good one.
Cheers, lads. 1, 2, 3.